Fate followed her foreseen, immutable road. Man's hopes and longings build the journeying wheels that bear the body of his destiny and lead his blind will towards an unknown goal. His fate within him shapes his acts and rules. Its face and form already are born in him, its parentage is in his secret soul. Here matter seems to mould the body's life, and the soul follows where its nature drives. Nature and fate compel his free will's choice. But greater spirits this balance can reverse, and make the soul the artist of its fate. This is the mystic truth our ignorance hides. Doom is a passage for our inborn force. Our ordeal is the hidden spirit's choice. Ananke is our being's own decree. All was fulfilled, the heart of Savitri, flower sweet and adamant, passionate and calm, had chosen, and on her strength's unbending road forced to its issue the long cosmic curve. Once more she sat behind loud hastening hoofs. The speed of armored squadrons and a voice far heard of chariots bore her from her home. A couchant earth wakened in its dumb hues, looked up at her from a vast indolence. Hills wallowing in a bright haze, large lands that lolled at ease beneath the summer heavens, region on region spacious in the sun, cities like chrysalides in the white blaze and yellow rivers pacing lion-maned, led to the Shalwa march's emerald line, a happy front to iron vastnesses and austere peaks and titan solitudes. Once more was near the fair and fated place, the borders gleaming with the grove's delight, where first she met the face of Satyavan, and he saw, like one waking into a dream, some timeless beauty and reality, the moon-gold sweetness of heaven's earth-born child. The past receded and the future neared. Far now behind lay Madra's spacious halls, the white-carved pillars, the cool dim alcoves, the tinged mosaic of the crystal floors, the towered pavilions, the wind-rippled pools, and gardens humming with the murmur of bees. Forgotten soon, or a pale memory, the fountain splash in the white stone-bound pool, the thoughtful noontide's brooding solemn trance, the colonnade's dream grey in the quiet eve, the slow moonrise gliding in front of night. Left far behind were now the faces known, the happy silken babble on laughter's lips, and the close clinging clasp of intimate hands, and adoration's light in cherished eyes offered to the one sovereign of their life. Nature's primeval loneliness was here. Here only was the voice of bird and beast, the ascetic's exile in the dim-souled, huge, inhuman forest, far from cheerful sound of man's blithe converse and his crowded days. In a broad eve with one red eye of cloud, through a narrow opening, a green flowered cleft, out of the stare of sky and soil they came into a mighty home of emerald dusk. There onward led by a faint brooding path, which toiled through the shadow of enormous trunks, and under arches, misers of sunshine, they saw low thatched roofs of a hermitage, huddled beneath a patch of azure hue in a sunlit clearing that seemed the outbreak of a glad smile in the forest's monstrous heart. A rude refuge of the thought and will of man, watched by the crowding giants of the wood. Arrived in that rough-hewn homestead, they gave, questioning no more the strangeness of her fate, their pride and loved one to the great blind king. A regal pillar of fallen mightiness, and the stately careworn woman, once a queen, who now hoped nothing for herself from life, but all things only hoped for her one child, calling on that single head from partial fate, all joy of earth, all heaven's beatitude. Adoring wisdom and beauty like a young god's, she saw him loved by heaven as by herself. She rejoiced in his brightness and believed in his fate, and knew not of the evil drawing near. Lingering some days upon the forest verge, like men who lengthen out departure's pain, unwilling to separate sorrowful clinging hands, unwilling to see for the last time a face, heavy with the sorrow of a coming day, and wondering at the carelessness of fate, who breaks with idle hands her supreme works, they parted from her with pain-fraught, burdened hearts, as forced by inescapable fate we part from one whom we shall never see again. Driven by the singularity of her fate, helpless against the choice of Savitri's heart, they left her to her rapture and her doom in the tremendous forest's savage charge. All put behind her that was once her life, all welcomed that henceforth was his and hers, she abode with Satyavan in the wild woods. Priceless she deemed her joy so close to death. Apart with love, she lived for love alone. As if self-poised above the march of days, her immobile spirit watched the haste of time, a statue of passion and invincible force, an absolutism of sweet, imperious will, a tranquillity and a violence of the gods, indomitable and immutable. At first to her, beneath the sapphire heavens, the sylvan solitude was a gorgeous dream, an altar of the summer's splendor and fire, a sky-topped flower-hung palace of the gods, and all its scenes a smile on rapture's lips, and all its voices bards of happiness. There was a chanting in the casual wind, there was a glory in the least sunbeam. Night was a chrysoprase of velvet cloth, a nestling darkness or a moonlit deep. Day was a purple pageant and a hymn, a wave of the laughter of light from morn to eve. His absence was a dream of memory, his presence was the empire of a god. A fusing of the joys of earth and heaven, a tremulous blaze of nuptial rapture past, a rushing of two spirits to be one, a burning of two bodies in one flame. Opened were gates of unforgettable bliss. Two lives were locked within an earthly heaven, and fate and grief fled from that fiery hour. But soon now failed the summer's ardent breath, and throngs of blue-black clouds crept through the sky, and rain fled sobbing over the dripping leaves, and storm became the forest's titan voice. Then, listening to the thunder's fatal crash, and the fugitive pattering footsteps of the showers, and the long unsatisfied panting of the wind, and sorrow muttering in the sound-vexed night, the grief of all the world came near to her. Night's darkness seemed her future's ominous face. The shadow of her lover's doom arose, and fear laid hands upon her mortal heart. The moments swift and ruthless raced, alarmed her thoughts, her mind, remembered Narad's state. Her trembling moved, accountant of her riches, she reckoned the insufficient days between. A dire expectancy knocked at her breast. Dreadful to her were the footsteps of the hours. Grief came, a passionate stranger, to her gate. Banished when in his arms, out of her sleep, it rose at morn to look into her face. Vainly she fled into abysms of bliss from her pursuing foresight of the end. The more she plunged into love, that anguish grew. Her deepest grief from sweetest gulfs arose. Remembrance was a poignant pang. She felt each day a golden leaf torn cruelly out from her too slender book of love and joy. Thus swaying in strong gusts of happiness, and swimming in foreboding's somber waves, and feeding sorrow and terror with her heart, for now they sat among their bosom's guests, or in her inner chambers paced apart, her eyes stared blind into the future's night. Out of her separate self she looked and saw, moving amid the unconscious faces loved, in mind a stranger, though in heart so near, the ignorant smiling world go happily by upon its way towards an unknown doom, and wondered at the careless lives of men. As if in different worlds they walked, though close, they confident of the returning sun, they wrapped in little hourly hopes and tasks. She, in her dreadful knowledge, was alone. The rich and happy secrecy that once enshrined her as if in a silver bower, a part in a bright nest of thoughts and dreams, made room for tragic hours of solitude and lonely grief that none could share or know. Her body seeing the end too soon of joy and the fragile happiness of its mortal love. Her quiet visage, still and sweet and calm, her graceful daily acts were now a mask. In vain she looked upon her depths to find a ground of stillness and the spirit's peace. Still veiled from her was the silent being within, who sees life's drama pass with unmoved eyes, supports the sorrow of the mind and heart, and bears in human breasts the world and fate. A glimpse of flashes came, the presence was hid. Only her violent heart and passionate will were pushed in front to meet the immutable doom. Defenseless, nude, bound to her human lot, they had no means to act, no way to save. These she controlled, nothing was shown outside. She was still to them the child they knew and loved. The sorrowing woman they saw not within. No change was in her beautiful motions seen. A worshipped empress, all once vied to serve, she made herself the diligent serf of all, nor spared the labour of broom and jar and well, or close gentle tending, or to heap the fire of altar and kitchen, no slight task allowed to others that her woman's strength might do. In all her acts a strange divinity shone. Into the simplest movement she could bring a oneness with earth's glowing robe of light, a lifting up of common acts by love. All love was hers, and its one heavenly cord bound all to all with her as golden tie. But when her grief to the surface pressed too close, these things, once gracious adjuncts of her joy, seemed meaningless to her, a gleaming shell, or were around mechanical and void, her body's actions shared not by her will. Always behind this strange divided life, her spirit, like a sea of living fire, possessed her lover and to his body clung, one locked embrace to guard its threatened mate. At night she woke through the slow silent hours, brooding on the treasure of his bosom and face, hung over the sleep-bound beauty of his brow, or laid her burning cheek upon his feet. Waking at morn, her lips endlessly clung to his, unwilling ever to separate again, or lose that honeyed drain of lingering joy, unwilling to loose his body from her breast, the warm, inadequate signs that love must use. Intolerant of the poverty of time, her passion catching at the fugitive hours, willed the expense of centuries in one day of prodigal love and the surf of ecstasy. Or else she strove even in mortal time to build a little room for timelessness by the deep union of two human lives, her soul secluded, shut into his soul. After all was given, she demanded still. Even by his strong embrace unsatisfied, she longed to cry, O tender Satyavan, O lover of my soul, give more of love, while yet thou canst, to her thou lovest. Imprint thyself for every nerve to keep, that thrills to thee the message of my heart. For soon we part, and who shall know how long before the great wheel in its monstrous round restore us to each other and our love. Too well she loved to speak a fateful word and lay her burden on his happy head. She pressed the outsurging grief back into her breast to dwell within silent, unhelped, alone. But Satyavan sometimes half understood, or felt at least with the uncertain answer of our thought-blinded hearts the unuttered need, the unplumbed abyss of her deep, passionate want. All of his speeding days that he could spare from labor in the forest hewing wood and hunting food in the wild sylvan glades, and service to his father's sightless life, he gave to her, and helped to increase the hours by the nearness of his presence and his clasp, and lavish softness of heart-seeking words, and the close beating felt of heart on heart. all was too little for her bottomless need. If in his presence she forgot a while, grief filled his absence with its aching touch. She saw the desert of her coming days imaged in every solitary hour. Although with the vain imaginary bliss of fiery union through death's door of escape, she dreamed of her body robed in funeral flame, she knew she must not clutch that happiness to die with him and follow, seizing his robe across our other countries, travellers glad into the sweet or terrible beyond. For those sad parents still would need her here to help the empty remnant of their day. Often it seemed to her the age's pain had pressed their quintessence into her single woe, concentrating in her a tortured world. Thus, in the silent chamber of her soul, cloistering her love to live with secret grief, she dwelt like a dumb priest with hidden gods, unappeased by the wordless offering of her days, lifting to them her sorrow like frankincense, her life the altar, herself the sacrifice. Yet ever they grew into each other more, until it seemed no power could rend apart, since even the body's walls could not divide. For when he wandered in the forest, oft her conscious spirit walked with him, and knew his actions as if in herself he moved. He, less aware, thrilled with her from afar. Always the stature of her passion grew. Grief, fear became the food of mighty love. Increased by its torment, it filled the whole world. It was all her life, became her whole earth and heaven. Although life-born, an infant of the hours, immortal it walked, unslayable as the gods. Her spirit stretched measurelessly in strength divine, an anvil for the blows of fate and time. Or tired of sorrow's passionate luxury, grief's self became calm, dull-eyed, resolute, awaiting some issue of its fiery struggle, some deed in which it might forever cease, victorious over itself and death and tears. The year now paused upon the brink of change. No more the storms sailed with stupendous wings, and thunder strode in wrath across the world, but still was heard a muttering in the sky, and rain dripped wearily through the mournful air, and grey, slow-drifting clouds shut in the earth. So her grief's heavy sky shut in her heart. Her still self hid behind, but gave no light. No voice came down from the forgotten heights. Only in the privacy of its brooding pain, her human heart spoke to the body's fate.